dbkmediaservices.com.
Listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SBC Sports Talk Podcast. SBC Sports Talk is brought to you by SVCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Sports. And now, here are your hosts, Shane Combs, Derek Webb, and Bruce Knox.
Hello, SVC sports fans, and welcome in to episode 175 of SVC Sports Talk, brought to you, as always, by Triple Crown Family Fun Center. All kinds of fun under one roof. That's Triple Crown Family Fun Center, located at 1 Nancy Wilson Way in Chillicothe, right off of Bridge Street, just behind the Hampton Inn. The Indoor Soccer League just getting underway right now. We're into the late registration until January the 13th. If you happen to be listening before January the 13th, you better get in there. And then it is a great place to have a birthday party. And to these two guys, I want you to know my birthday is just around the corner. So you guys, you know, just dropping subtle hints here is all. They have no less than 17 different inflatables for rent, which would also be a great birthday present, guys, including the always popular Batman Challenge. So give them a call, 740-773-7529, and tell them Shane and the boys at SVC Sports Talk sent you. And now I would like to bring in the boys. First of all, Mr. Derek Webb of the Chillicothe Gazette. How are you, Derek?
Good. I'm happy to be back. It's been a needed, I guess, break with the holidays, but I've kind of missed the show and missed being out in the field. So I'm glad to kind of get back into the swing of things here.
Did I see that you went south for the holidays?
Not for the holidays. I went to Florida after the holidays. I actually rode with Sir Brock Netter, as we talked about in preparation, all the way down to a place called Bradenton, Florida. Yeah. So, we went down there and kind of enjoyed the sun. And I've got a nice tan, and I'm ready to go.
Oh, well, gee. Yes, you do. You look very nice tonight. And the other sports nerd that we have with us tonight is the usual. He's the rock, the cornerstone, the big kahuna when it comes to SVC sports, Mr. Shane Combs. How are you, Shane?
Doing great, Bruce. It is good to be back. I had some fun time off, enjoyed the Christmas time. Got a chance to when you get around a lot of different games and a lot of the different shopping and things like that, you run into a lot of different people. And came across a neat place, Buckeye Designs and Engraving. Ran into an old high school buddy I played against there. I want to give a shout out to Ben there. I know he made him aware of the show, and he loves the idea, so hopefully he'll be listening into us. But it was a lot of fun. I probably went to 7-8 different games over the break and enjoyed some time off, but certainly ready to get back at it.
It's the most wonderful time of the year for Shane, and it's not because necessarily of the holidays, although that's a big part of it, but he gets to see lots and lots of basketball. So guys, it was we've been off for about 3 weeks now, and what are your thoughts? We'll talk about the time off and so forth here. Let's talk about the boys' situation first in basketball. And Derek, what sticks out in your mind about the time since we've been here on the podcast?
It looks like to me, you know, right now, and I've kind of actually covered Paint Valley for their last three games. I think Andrew Bronner, one of their guards, made a joke to me last night. He asked me if I was their beat writer now, which does make sense. I saw them. I've gotten a chance to see them a lot this year. I think I've covered the Bearcats maybe five times, most probably of any other area high school, just kind of the way the coverage has fell. But looks, you know, they're a hot team right now, a dangerous team. We saw kind of Dylan Swingle go off this past weekend, and I think you still have to look at Unyoda as kind of the king of the conference, if you would. Just a lot of talent there. They're very deep, as usual. Just kind of that, and maybe Paint Valley can give them a run for their money, and we'll see. But right now, I don't know if Shane would agree with this, but the way it's been over the last couple of weeks, maybe Paint Valley or Edina is one of those teams, or maybe the only the only kind of threats to Uniota, if there are any, after kind of the actions unfolded here.
Shane, what do you think about that?
Well, I think what jumps out at me, guys, over the break is, and I mentioned this in our post-game comments on the show right leading up to break, is when you get to this time of year, you start to see a lot of these non-conference matchups, and you start to see a lot of different aspects of each of our league teams. With Uniota, they played some really high-level teams over the break. It's a chance to learn more about who they are. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of times, the teams in our league just don't have the personnel to maybe exploit some different things you want to against Uniota. So Uniota gets a chance, a Fairfield Union, a Wilmington. You know, I know they played Logan earlier in the year. Those are the types of games where they're going to really learn a lot about themselves. Derek mentioned Payne Valley, certainly as hot a basketball team as we've had over the last couple of weeks, boys or girls. And I think the key for them now is, can they bring it back into league play? They lost a tough one Friday night, and they win a close one Saturday. But you know, when you look at them go to head-to-head with a Lynchburg Clay, when you look and see some of the different things they're doing, can they bring that back into the league and be confident enough to finish some of these games? You know, like Saturday night, I thought that was a game that the more they get used to winning, that's the type of game, leading by 12 going into the fourth quarter, you take over and you win that game rather easily. Instead, they were in a total dogfight. Mm-hmm. And then there's Aintray Southeastern, Piketon, Westfall. All of those teams jump out at me as teams that play really, really tough schedules. And what does that do to the confidence of young teams? How do they respond to that? You bring all that back into the weekend, and I guess once we get back to league play, Derek, I guess you come back to that parity word, because you know, Friday night, Uniota wins big. You get two tight games elsewhere with the mm-hmm. one being canceled. Saturday night, Uniota, I won't say dominated, but they were certainly in control of the game. But then you had three competitive games elsewhere where really all the way down to the last 3-4 minutes, all three of those other games were undecided. So it's certainly very competitive. And now that a lot of teams, Bruce, have played 70-80% of their non-league schedule, looks like league pretty much the rest of the way out. So we're going to get a lot of these types of games, I think.
Let's flip it over to the girls' side. And Derek, what are you thinking about the time off in the since our last episode in the girls' league?
Well, I mean, in the girls' league, you know, you've got and I've said this all along, I mean, really a type of Southeastern team where, you know, the Ellen Skeens and the Audrey Wheelers of the world, plus you start to see some of their role players really step up in games, whether it be conference or non-conference. I really like watching Mandy Morris play. You know, then we got the Mitten Sisters, McKinley and Callie. Rachel Collins, you know, contributes there. And they've even got some bench players that can come in and really contribute and eat up some minutes. And then Uniota, I mean, they continue to grow right before our eyes. And we're at Benton County yesterday, and, you know, that was a big win there. We know they can score. I'd like to see them a little bit more on the defensive side, you know, maybe kind of put the clamps down. But I know Jeff Miller's kind of philosophy is score. Yeah. That he's an offensive-minded coach. And then he piked in. I think they've been hurt with Kara Blanton out a little bit. They've kind of stayed afloat, though. They're still 9-3 and 4-2 in the conference. And then Huntington with Braden Collins and Kelsey McDonald kind of leading the way there. And you know, all of those are dangerous teams. And you look at kind of Paint Valley, Zane Trace, Adina, Westfall. Paint Valley, obviously, I think they're a dangerous team on any night as well, with Lexi Woods and, you know, kind of back at full strength now, as we kind of talked about. But, you know, I mean, I think in the girls, you got a lot more parity than you do, or at the top at least, than you do in the boys, because the boys, obviously, with Uniota being there. But Uniota and Southeastern, Shane, I was really actually excited for that matchup. And then it got snowed out on Thursday after the snowouts. And so I was going to be there at Uniota to watch the Southeastern Uniota and that type of top of the conference tilt. But we'll have to wait for that one. But, I mean, you know, never know. Anybody can beat anybody on any given night.
Yep. Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, the league standings are certainly tight. Obviously, the weather plays a role in that, because you don't get that Huntington-Paint Valley matchup. You don't get that Uniota-Southeastern matchup. So it is. I guess, Bruce, for me, what jumps out is, you know, we were pretty hard on this girls' league when we were coming out of volleyball. Remember the mm-hmm. discussion of the volleyball to basketball? And I don't have the exact math in front of me, but I want to say like the top six teams in our league are something in the 23-6, 24-5s range, somewhere in there in the non-conference. So, I mean, it's it's certainly been a pretty solid year for our league. And as we get into the league standings now, as we said, they are kind of tight there at the top. It'll work itself out. But I tell you, even Edina is a much improved team. Westfall has a lot of young kids that are mixing between the JV and varsity level. But then, you know, when you get to those top six, like we said, you certainly get some good matchups, and you have the experience of a Southeastern, a Paint Valley, even a Piketon. The reason Piketon's able to come through the injuries they have throughout the year is because people forget there's 3-4 starters that he's running out there that, you know, played an entire year of varsity basketball last year, including a dogfight of a sectional final that they played in. So there's a lot of basketball experience there, and they really, really guard you. I think one of the most one of the best compliments as a coach you can hear is when someone says that your team is really hard to play against. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you, Piketon is really hard to play against. I mean, they really, really guard you, and they really, really control tempo. But then you look at the youth of a Uniota, the youth of a Huntington, and the way they're scoring the basketball. Derek just talked about it. Both of those teams, when they're able to figure out a way to really dig in and guard, and then not only guard, but on the Huntington side of things, where they struggle a little bit more than Uniota, is you got to finish it with a rebound. So with the size of Uniota, the lack of size of Huntington there. But yeah, there's a lot to be excited about. So over the next month or so, I would say buckle up. I think the girls' league has a lot of exciting basketball to play.
All right, that's good stuff. Hey, I want to move on, guys. We'll talk both boys and girls and hear more in a little bit. But we got some feedback that was kind of interesting. We thought we'd throw in a little discussion here on it. It's, I don't know, Shane, did this come in through email? I don't.
The one bulk thing had an email, but I've run into a couple different things. One actually in a game I was in, the other one in a particular game where I was, you know, Derek will know this. You always get on the scores table after the games because you try to get a picture of the book or whatever,
yep,
just to get different things. And well, when you're down there, you can certainly get some different feedback, and some different people have listened to the show, and some people had some comments there. So I kind of blended those a little bit together, but it's always neat when you go up to places and, you know, they make the comments, and it's exciting to run into people that have obviously listened to the show.
All right. Well, this feedback says people, including fans and even coaches, can be extremely rude to all game workers, including scoreboard operator, PA announcer, and other volunteers. And this particular person says, I think this is unfortunate and extremely uncalled for and should be punished by administrators when seen. Comments from either of you? Why are you?
Well, I'm staying out of this one.
No.
So I guess that means I guess.
Yeah, you
get
it.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, all the people, and when I say all the people, I include all the people that were mentioned there in the feedback, need to be aware of something. You know, when you're at the varsity level, the first thing, because I've been an administrator myself in the past, I think it's really important. You can take care of so many different problems by really working hard in the off season and preseason, and getting into a lot of communication and getting quality people to help you. Now, I'm the first to understand when it comes to volunteers, you got to get the people that are willing to do it or so forth. But I think there's enough people in our communities that are really passionate about being a part of what's going on, that if you can take care of them in different ways, you can find some quality people. So I think the first thing I would say is administration needs to actively search for people who have knowledge of the game and knowledge of some of the things that go into running these aspects of the game. You know, once the game starts, coaches are certainly need to do a better job. They need to use better judgment at times. But I'll say this, oftentimes it is going to be an intense situation. It's not a personal thing. You know, if you're keeping a scorebook, if you're keeping a scoreboard, those are really, really important aspects of the game. So, you know, just like we say with officials sometimes, you know, there's a different investment in what an official might have in a Friday night basketball game and what a varsity basketball coach has in it. You know, it's that investment and that intensity. The other thing I'll say is a lot of times – things will happen in a boys game and people won't be able to hear them. Yeah. Unfortunately, things happen in a girls game. Yep. If you turn and say something, the entire gym might hear you. Yeah. Depending on, you know, where you're at or what the matchup is. So, you know, communication's important, but oftentimes, you know, oftentimes it's even indirect at the officials. There are certain things that you feel like the officials should have done differently. And, you know, Derek, I don't know if you run into this sometimes when you're trying to follow certain things, but I think you'll follow what I'm saying here. Some of these new gyms, I know from a coach's perspective, Southeastern, Piketon, those are two that jump right out at me. Even Uniota is in some ways, but you're a good distance away from the scores table. So when it comes to communicating, like Southeastern Piketon have the split scores table there, like they use for radio at boys games and so forth. So what happens is a lot of times, you know, your bookkeeper, especially on the road, they may be all the way on the other end in terms of communicating. So a lot of times in the heat of a battle, you know, I'm sure maybe a coach will say something and it'll come across the wrong way. And again, I'm not condoning any behavior of coaches yelling at game personnel there. I'm not saying that at all. But I do think sometimes what happens is the intensity of certain things. You know, Bruce, obviously you're one to jump in here too. You know, Derek, I know you as a media person at the scores table. Bruce, I know you work at the scores table. I would be interested to hear from both of you. I mean, you don't have to give examples if you don't want, but do you run into situations where you see people get frustrated and maybe act inappropriate at times, no matter if it be a coach, official, or anybody?
I have seen that once or twice, yes. And then I do the PA announcing at Vinton County, so I'm not the one that they you know are yelling at, but I've witnessed it. You know, particularly it seems like the two that I would think of is scoreboard operator and the bookkeeper, the official scorer, because they're the ones that there may be some disagreement. And, you know, the referees, while I think the official bookkeeper is, in fact, a part of the officials, you know, group, if you will. They are typically a representative of the home team. And so there's, you know, there's that. There's built in from the visiting standpoint. There's also a built in, you know, particularly I'll call it malice. That's probably not a good term towards the home bookkeeper from the visiting coach. Sometimes there's a little of that. But I think we all get a little bit, you know, wrapped up in the game. It gets intense. Feelings come out, you know, the filters come off. And I think there is some of that. And then you've got, you know, people in the crowd yelling at everybody. Sometimes the person pushing the button on the clock, they're going to have someone mad at them, particularly in a tight game. You know, you started the clock too early. You started the clock too late. You know, you didn't put the right person up there, you know, you know, no good deed goes unpunished. So all these people who are, you know, volunteers, I know some bigger schools sometimes pay, but most of them are volunteers and they're putting themselves out there. And I think they should be regarded as, you know, doing the best they can and not yelled at. But, you know, I can't control who yells at them or anything like that. Derek, you have any thoughts on this? I mean, you're one that sort of, you know, consumes what they're doing. Is that?
Well, you know, with you know, obviously at the end of the game, at the end of every game, I go up to each of the scorer, whoever's doing the score books and take a picture of their books. To me, it's sometimes it's fun to see those books and maybe how sometimes they're different and the scorekeepers themselves are arguing. I've seen that.
Yeah.
You know, well, that kid had this many or that kid had this many, but I guess maybe during the game, I've never seen a coach, you know, or a fan yell at a scorekeeper. I've seen a parent come up to a scorekeeper after the game, you know, and then complain about, well, you know, no, my kid had this many or my kid had this many. So I have seen that. But, you know, mostly for me, I'm watching the game. And I'm not really kind of like, maybe this is what I should be doing. But I'm just watching the game and I'm not really kind of paying attention to the scorekeeper. I kind of just trust what they have to say. I mean, again, as you said, these guys are volunteers. They don't have to be there.
Yeah.
So if they're going to be there on as a choice, you know, I guess I would trust that they're doing their job correctly anyways. But, you know, most of the blame or the yelling that they all go towards the officials. Like, I can't tell you how many nights I've sit and kind of thought to myself, oh, my goodness, like, you know, I would not be an official for anything.
Yeah.
Because, you know, no matter what you do, you're wrong.
Right.
So, yeah, most of the yelling and the hate sometimes does go toward the officials, especially on charge or block calls.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great example there. You're never going to be right. Somebody's always going to think you're wrong. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of what I hear of, you know, the most.
Right. Well, and I still would say again, Bruce, I can't emphasize enough how important it is to really research and try to be active in who you select. I know as a coach that I count on my scorekeeper to keep us posted on foul trouble and to help communicate with me or you know, the other night in a really, really close game, they messed the possession arrow up and our bookkeeper was right on it. That was a huge possession.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the types of things. So, you know, that's where, again, you want to actively look for someone that has an invested interest, you know, so oftentimes that is a parent that knows the game that's going to do a quality job for you. But I can tell you a lot of times, you know, in the heat of the battle, maybe it's the delivery or so forth, but, you know, usually it's, I've seen very few examples where it's been a personal attack. I'm not saying someone hasn't been intense or raised their voice or something, but, you know, yeah, I think a lot of times it's just the investment that, you know, coaches have or that, you know, maybe a parent, as Derek said, has or so forth. So, yeah, it's an interesting topic because in high school sports, there takes so many different volunteers and so many different people to kind of make the game night to flow calmly.
Yeah, when you mentioned parents at the scorer's table, I've had some interesting situations with that. You know, you're supposed to maintain a neutral stance, so that would be another qualification for that. They can't yell openly from the scores table, and I've seen that occur, though it's not pretty when it happens.
So, and again, you know, you got to kind of keep that in mind when you're getting your bookkeeper, and sometimes your hands are tied because you need someone to keep it, or maybe you have a fill-in sub that night or something. Yep. But yeah, all of those factors certainly go into it. That's
and
a good point.
And I've seen in the lower levels of the, you know, maybe the JV for girls or the freshman for guys, that sometimes, you know, it's whoever has a warm body and is willing to do it too. that's just say what it is sometimes. But yeah, that's something we, you know, if there's other feedback out there, I don't think we really got to the point where we discussed whether or not they should be punished. I guess we shouldn't have those situations, but we do. So, and
obviously, if you get to a situation that they're out of line, they should be punished. But I mean, my little chuckle there at the beginning, I thought kind of answered that.
Yep, right. I understand. All righty. Well, we will move on. Fans, stay with us. Up next, we'll discuss the Girls League entering the second half of the season. As the league started back up, we had Tuesday's action, and then we had that thing they call weather on Thursday. And so that kind of put a crimp into things for us. Thoughts on which teams were hurt the most and which one been helped by the most or helped the most from the weather, Shane?
Yeah, you guys, a lot of times when you take a question like this, it kind of depends on when and where the makeups are going to fall. I don't know. I think everyone has to go through it. I think it's going to affect everybody's practice schedule, everybody's routine. You're coming off the holidays already. Every school has a different rule or different parents on where you live and different concerns if you have a lot of kids on your team at drive. And so I think everybody deals with it, but I guess I certainly understand the question from a basketball standpoint. I guess, Derek, I would say probably Southeastern's hurt. I mean, they're the battle-tested team. They're the championship team. They're the ones that's ready to go, you would think. Anytime Uniota, with their youth, gets more opportunity to go out and play and Coach Miller gets more practice time and more games under their belt, they're only going to get better. You know, it kind of costs Huntington a home game. You know, that's a kind of a rare home game. You know, they're going to go to Westfall Tuesday night. Guys, when they play Uniota Thursday night, it'll be their 13th game of the year. It'll only be their fourth home game. Maybe it costs PV a little rhythm. They're a team early in the year that obviously at school went through some crazy adversity and they didn't get to play all their games at that time. And now they're getting back in rhythm a little bit and then they don't get to play. I think they start a stretch. We're recording here on Sunday night. Derek, I don't have their schedule in front of me, but I thought when I was researching earlier today, they start a stretch tomorrow night at White Oak. Mm-hmm. Where they play like 7 times in 15 days. I'll have to check that again, but I'm pretty sure I'm right on that, where they really get going here. So, you know, again, I don't know exactly who gets favored, who's not. I mean, Derek, I'll throw it over to you just because I know you start to put together and you have really probably better knowledge of scheduling than I do. I kind of look at our schedule and look at a scouting schedule. But, you know, do you see any favor, if you will, in terms of when those games were called the other night, if maybe a particular team maybe dodged a bullet or maybe getting more time to prepare?
Well, when it first happened, I thought, you know, hey, well, Piketon, with Kara Blanton being out, you know, they're just going to get an extra and a kind of an extra, you know, free pass for to get her back. Mm-hmm. But then they rescheduled that game on Saturday without Blanton with right. Westfall. You know, so that kind of took that out of there. I don't think any coach would say, well, I'm glad we didn't play that night.
Right.
You know, so I really wouldn't be able to think that would be a favor. I know some of the kids were hoping they weren't going to play. They wanted to have a full snow day. There was a couple that messaged me on Twitter. Hey, is our game canceled? Yeah. All right. Thank goodness. Thank you. Like, and it's like, you don't want to play tonight? Like, so, but yeah, I mean, I don't think anybody really comes out, you know, smelling like a rose because they didn't get to play that night. I mean, the more times you're on the basketball court, the better. I'm kind of with you, Shane. I think it kind of hurts more than it helps. You know, because if, say, I know, like, I think it was Paint Valley and Hillsborough, or Paint Valley and Huntington, you guys rescheduled that game to the January 21st. There was another game rescheduled to the 26th around the area. So, you know, you get into that late in the year. You know, as you said, you could really see a lot of like Paint Valley's going to have 7 to 15 days. You know, then you're going to have tired legs maybe going into a tournament stretch.
Sure.
So that's kind of what I would think. It would hurt more than help. I really can't think of anybody that it would be, you know, a plus for.
I agree.
And we're going into, you know, the rest of January, although the extended forecast doesn't look too bad. But, you know, February always gets us a few days, and late right. January could too as well. So it just compounds the problem, it seems like, if it's this early. So,
no question.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, Shane, it's time for the fast break on the girls' side. Can you take us there?
Yeah, let's do that. The we'll continue. It seems to be the way the fans like it for basketball, especially here. We'll keep it split and stay with the 3-question format. Brought to you by Crown Hill Golf Club. Give them a call, 740-986-4653. Obviously, this time of year, not a lot of golf being played, but I'm telling you, this is a great time of year to contact them because they have some great deals. Get yourself set to where I know a lot of times people wait way too late into the spring, guys, to take advantage of some of these deals. Get it done early so that you can enjoy your entire year with some of these membership packages they have. So with that in mind, Bruce, let's go ahead, girls segment. Let's go ahead and go to the fast break.
If you had to predict here at the halfway point, how many SVC teams do you feel could win a sectional title this winter?
You know, for me, right now, I've got Southeastern, Uniota, Huntington, and Piketon right now winning SVC titles, which is, I know that sounds like a lot, and now that could change based on who gets seeded where. If they play each other in the sectional title, kind of like Shane talked about earlier with Piketon and Huntington playing each other last year, that, you know, obviously that can't happen. But yeah, I mean, I've got 4 right now that are very legitimate sectional title contenders, in my opinion. You know, obviously with Southeastern and Uniota maybe leading that group. But the only thing I'll say about Uniota is in a Division II sectional title, that Southeast district is just absolutely loaded. with Miami Trace, Chillicothe, all those teams. You know, then you can put Unyoda in there. They're very young. They just played Chillicothe, got beat by 14. So I don't see them beat Miami Trace or Chillicothe in a sectional title if they get hooked up that way. But if they get the right matchup, I think they could. Then Pike, Huntington, and Southeastern, you know, they've got the firepower, each one of them, Piketon with the defensive firepower to do so.
Well, I agree with the number four as a possibility, but for different reasons. I think what happened, I totally agree with everything you said with Unyoda. I think they're very capable. It is going to be very difficult. I'll throw Paint Valley into there on the girls' side. Keep in mind, Paint Valley continues to play at the D4 level. This is a basketball team with Lexi Woods healthy. I really believe they're going to win double-digit games, so they're going to be a really tough out in the D4 sectional. And then on the D3 side, unfortunately, it is looking like, unless Huntington or Piketon really, really gets hot, the way the three Southern Hills League teams are playing and the way Southern Hills League outnumbers the SVC in that vote, it looks like Huntington and Piketon could get thrown right back into that same situation this year. So that's unfortunate for the SVC. But, yeah, obviously Southeastern's a no-brainer. And I wouldn't even count out some teams. It always depends on matchups. But I would say four. But obviously we'll need to see the brackets as we get closer to that time.
When you look at our Dean of Sports Medicine SVC leaders on the website, what stat is most impressive to you?
You know, for me, I think it's Josie Fisher's averages. I mean, she's averaging 12.2 a game and points, and then 9.4 in rebounds. I mean, I never really looked at Unyoda this year and thought Josie Fisher is going to be one of their top players. You know, you do think about the field, the Sigmund, the Adkins. You heard about this freshman class, but I mean, when I wrote the previews, you know, about Unyoda, Josie Fisher's name just never came up to me in my mind. And then she just, boom, you know, is on the scene. She's a great athlete, great on the volleyball court as well. So I think I'd go with her. Those has been the most maybe surprising and most impressive to me.
Yeah, we're in a similar thinking pattern here, Derek, because I look at the efficiencies that some of our top scorers are doing it with. You know, a lot of times you look at scores and you think, okay, are they volume shooters? Are they doing it with a lot of shots? And that's not the case at all here. I mean, if you look at Braden Collins and Ella Skeens and Audrey Wheeler, Josie Fisher, these kids are right up in the top of the field goal percentage as well. So they're doing it on as few shots as possible when you think of how many points they are scoring a night. But I think some of the people that deserve some of the credit is when you go into the assist category. You look at the freshman backcourt of Coleman and Cottrell of Unyoda. Ricky McGill, again, I can't say enough about what she's doing. Collins and McDonald getting a lot of the publicity, which rightfully so. They're two great sophomores. But Ricky McGill's a senior, taking over a point guard position where, you know, that's not her prototypical spot, and leading the league in assists. So I think some of the people passing the ball, setting some of these kids up, deserve a lot of credit as well.
What do you see as the key factor in deciding the SVC race later this year?
To me, on the girls' side, I mean, I think it's the health of Southeastern. I mean, if they've got Ella and Audrey both healthy and you know, not, you know, maybe go down with a, hopefully, you know, God forbid, an injury. I think they're obviously the team to beat. They're still undefeated. They still, you know, have they're the reigning champs. I mean, you got to beat the best to be the best, right? I would say the health of that Panthers team and all around, even the role players, you know, like I mentioned earlier, if they have every key in place, I mean, I don't see them getting beat this year.
Yeah, I mean, the key factor, Bruce, without a doubt, is Ella Skeens. I mean, she's the X factor. She's the thing that makes Southeastern just a bear to match up with and figure out. You certainly have to throw in Unyoda's depth of talent. You appreciate how hard Huntington and Piketon play, Paint Valley's ability, Zane Trace's experience. But again, just Southeastern, battle-tested, and with Ella leading the way, she's certainly the X factor that has to be figured out if you're going to do anything with them.
Okay, that is our fast break on the girls segment anyway. Again, brought to you by Crown Hill Golf Club. Give them a call and tell them that Shane and the boys at SVC Sports Talk sent you. Hey, we want to give a shout out to our other sponsor, C&K Athletic Equipment. Again, they are your local supplier for all local apparel, local school apparel. You can find them at 116 East High Street in Circleville, 740-477-9828. Give them a call today and see what they can fix you up with. They have fitness gear, sports accessories, all kinds of headwear, and other sports equipment. Find them on the web. It's www.cnkathleticequipment.com. And tell them, too, that SVC Sports Talk sent you. Hey, the biggest topic over the last month is a topic of handling kids who play freshman and JV and boys, or a split of JV and varsity and boys, or in the girls. And to summarize the feedback, people just aren't sure what goes into these decisions, and so we were going to kind of discuss that a little bit. It's a mixing pot, is it not, Shane, of considerations? I'll put it that way.
It really is. It's a culture thing is the first thing that comes to my mind, because the culture of JV sports, freshman sports, have really changed in the last 15 to 20 years. A lot of times, and I think it goes all the way into our little league culture and what's happened to our junior high numbers, but it's become a situation of sometimes when you start saying, okay, you'll be on the JV team, it's almost like some of the kids and their parents look at you and like, you want me to play what? You know what I mean? It's a thing of where, you know, I can remember 15, 20 years ago in the SBC, if you played JV even as a freshman, that was a pretty big deal. And now it's become more of a thing where we've lost a little bit of our significance in terms of some of our feeder programs. But this is certainly always a factor in small school settings. When you look at graduation hitting certain schools, if you look at like Westfall girls a year ago or Huntington girls, Zane Trace boys, another one that comes to my mind, where some of those schools were graduating their entire starting lineups, or, mm-hmm. or you know, 6-7 different letter winners that played in their rotation. So, you know, now a year later, when you look at a lot of freshmen, sophomores coming into their program, how do they mix between freshman and JV? How do they go between JV and varsity? And we even talk a little bit in this discussion, guys, about what do you do with juniors a lot of times on JV. That's a topic that comes up a lot. But, you know, to me, basketball allows you to play the five per night. And what goes into putting a kid on varsity? Well, I can only speak for my philosophy. I can't speak for every coach. But to me, I look to see, when do I feel a kid is ready for varsity? Is when he or she can play the role or work toward the role you think they are going to play at in the peak of their career. So what I mean by that, guys, is take a ball handler or a shooter, for example. You can't always develop those things at the varsity level. If I'm going to put a kid out at the varsity level, and I expect this kid to be a pretty good shooter someday, but I'm not willing to let this freshman, you know, shoot the ball freely at the varsity level, well, it's going to be a hard thing to develop at the varsity level. At the JV level, I might be able to let a ball handler take over. Maybe even if he or she's not really a point guard, maybe they're working on their ball handling skills by running the point for that team, or they're able to learn how to create their own shot, or they're able to get some game reps in terms of shooting. It might even just be time and score situations and learning the game and understanding how to lead a team. So there's a lot of different factors, but I think what happens so many times is we rush kids to the varsity level, we end up not playing them enough minutes, and then we end up putting them in roles where we have to limit them in terms of how free they are with the ball, how free they are in their shot selection. And then what unfortunately happens is a year or two later, they're not developed maybe quite the way we thought they were going to in the previous year. So, you know, that's kind of my feedback on it. I know we have some different questions, Bruce. I'll let you kind of lead the discussion there. But that's just kind of the overall topic or some of the questioning that I get with some of our really talented young people in the league.
Yeah, we're going to play a little fair, unfair here. And I'll read the statement. You tell me whether this is fair or unfair. And we'll go to Shane first. A kid is going to get better practicing varsity than playing in a JV game. Fair or unfair?
Well, guys, I've been asked this question, I'm not exaggerating, five times probably over the Christmas break alone. Huh. And I don't even get it. It's not even a question to me. Like, I guess what I would say to this is, why does it have to be one or the other? You know what I mean? It's one of those things where a kid can play in the JV game and still practice with varsity. It's not going on at the same time. You know what I mean? Like, what I always say is, you don't play the JV game and the varsity's not practicing in the other gym. I mean, it's those things aren't happening at the same time. So, like, if you believe in those two things, I think it can happen. I will say this real quick, Derek, and I don't know if you can relate this back to when you were an athlete in high school, but, like, a lot of times what's happened is the philosophy in the last 15 years it's changed is the two practices. You know, a lot of times they'll say, we don't want kids practicing, you know, 3 hours a night. They shouldn't have to practice JV and varsity. But, you know, to me, maybe I'm stupid. I mean, maybe kids do go right home and have their milk and cookies and do their homework at 4 o'clock and they're in bed by nine. I don't know. You know what I'm saying? Like, but I could tell you that, it's just not that big a deal to go through the two practices. I know I did it as a young kid, and, you know, obviously if you're a kid that's been asked to do this, you're an important part of the program, but it is interesting. I think varsity assistants have been taken away from a lot of programs. I think more programs are practicing JV and varsity together, but, you know, I don't know, you as an athlete, Derek, did you have any experience? And I certainly want to give you a chance to answer the fair unfair there, but I just one maybe from a bigger school like Chillicothe, maybe that viewpoint would be interesting to me.
Yeah, I mean, when I played baseball with on DeBarty Dunn, I was, as a freshman, I started out on the freshman baseball team, worked my way up to the JV team, and then at the end of the year, got called up for a varsity tournament. And now I can say this, all of that experience helped me get on the varsity team by the beginning of the year during my sophomore year. I was a 3-year starter on the varsity baseball team. But if I didn't have that experience in freshman and the JV levels, I would have never gotten on to that varsity level as a sophomore. I mean, I would have been a junior or a senior even being on that varsity level the first time. When I was a freshman, I practiced with both the freshman and the JV. And then when I got to the JV, I practiced with both the JV and the varsity. And, you know, that was really kind of our choice. If we wanted to do that, we could. And I wanted to do that because, you know, it's my opinion that every time you're on the field, you get better. The more reps Absolutely. You have it, everywhere you're at, you get better. I mean, the more ground balls that are hit to me at third base, I just get better that way. So, yeah, I mean, you know, we kind of had that choice, but I chose to go through those two practices as well.
Well, yeah. You didn't like the first question, Shane. Let's see what you do to the second question. Fair or unfair? A kid is going to get better in 3 minutes of a varsity game compared to 4 quarters of a JV game.
Again, I understand the two parts of it. I'll say unfair. You know, look, you're going to get better. Derek just said it.
Yeah.
You're going to get better every single time you play. So you are going to get a rare experience in terms of taking your learning how to keep your composure and handling situation or the speed of the varsity game. I'm not saying those 3 minutes aren't very valuable in terms of letting you know what you have to do to become a varsity player. Mm-hmm. But if your skills aren't ready for that, or if you're not in a role where your skills are going to be allowed to be on display and for you to work through learning, mm-hmm. then you're not ready for it. You know, what happens is you get better by playing. I couldn't agree with Derek Moore. You have 4 minutes compared to 24 minutes. Right. I mean, you know, if a player is only playing 8-9 minutes, they're obviously not that high on the depth chart. So I guess a big school might be able to survive this, but I'm telling you, at the small school, I've always said the one thing we have to do at the small school is we have to be really dynamic in our development. We have to be 100% perfect in our development. We can't afford to let athletes get away. So I guess the only thing I think sometimes that we do, and I still think it's a lot of the culture that we've let happen to our JV levels, is we accelerate these kids and they're not always ready. Well, what's happening is you'll see a lot of freshmen and sophomores in boys and girls basketball, they might play 2 quarters of JV, and then they may only play like 2 or 3 minutes in the varsity game. So, you know, what's happening too many times with our young kids is, you know, they might only be getting 12, 13 minutes. Now, are they getting better in the practice setting? Absolutely. I mean, do I think last year Braden Collins and Kelsey McDonald got better practicing against Carlon Cox and Ariel Sams? Mm-hmm. Well, sure they did. But they also understood what it meant to take on the challenges in JV games and run their team and run the point and do some of those different things. So, I just think if you combine those questions, Bruce, I just feel like that both of those things, you know, can happen as a mixture.
Okay, well, we've got one final question here. This is not really a fair or unfair. It's just asking for your thoughts on a junior playing junior varsity. Any problem with that?
Well, this is really interesting to hear from Derek here in just a second at a bigger school. But I will say this. There's two times I like it, and I've always been pretty clear on this as a coach. One, if you're a senior loaded group mm-hmm. and you have a junior who you know is going to play a key role for you next year, you really need to have that kid playing and continuing to develop his or her skills because they're going to be ready to play a role for you at that time. The second time is if your numbers aren't real good at the freshman sophomore level and a junior can go down and help a young kid develop. For example, let's say you have a young freshman post player that you really want to develop. Well, maybe having a junior point guard on your JV team allows that post to properly be able to get his or her touches in a game. I've used the example before of maybe using a junior catcher. If you have two freshman pitchers on your JV level, you know, Derek could probably comment to that. You know, those types of things, Derek. So when you see a question like that with the junior class, I was really curious to even see another big school feel. Is that something that was common at a place like Chillicothe, or as you cover sports now, do you see some of that in terms of juniors playing some JV?
I absolutely see that. I mean, I can, you know, I probably can name a couple of them. I won't, but I probably could. You know, I guess I look at it this way. In as a sports fan, you know, say I'm a huge, Zane Trace Pioneers fan. If I'm a huge Zane Trace Pioneers fan, well, guess what I want the Zane Trace Pioneers to do? I want them to win. And as a fan, I want the best, you know, 9 or 10 players on the varsity roster, whether they be freshman, senior, junior, sophomore, whatever that is. I want to see that team win. You know, and I think a lot of people, you know, they kind of get I want to say this the right way. I think they get caught up in, well, hey, you know, he's a senior, he's a junior, and, you know, he's not playing much. Or, I mean, he's a senior on the varsity level, and he doesn't play much. Well, you know, I get that. And if you've been a part of the program for 4 years and you're a senior and you've worked just as hard as the other kids, I totally get that argument. I really do. But at the same time, for some reason or another, that varsity coach must think that, you know, if say, a sophomore is playing instead of that senior – that sophomore contributes more to the team on that night. So, you know, and as a media member, I'm kind of biased towards the coaches because, you know, I'm close with all of those guys. You know, I guess I trust their opinions and trust their decisions. Now, I'm not a part of that program. You know, but as a fan, I can say that, you know, I want the 9 best players on the court at all times, no matter what type of year they are. You know, you kind of look at a you can even look at a JV football team or a varsity football team, you know, or even go to college football. You know, are you telling me that JT Barrett was a sophomore last year on Ohio State's football team? But, you know, they should have started this guy because JT Barrett was a sophomore. Hmm. You know, I just don't get that argument. I mean, if JT Barrett was the better quarterback, he should play quarterback. You know, I mean, to me, you know, and then at to answer your question, Shane, at a big school, you know, I still see juniors play, you know, JV at Chillicothe. There's a junior on their boys basketball JV team right now. But again, if he was playing varsity, I don't think he would see playing time. So, I mean, I think the question arises for that kid. Hey, and again, when I was in school, I don't know if it's still this way at CHS, but they give us the choice. You know, hey, you can either play JV and you'll play, or you can sit varsity. Well, I'm going to play. You know, I mean, I'll play JV because I want to be in the game. I want to compete. So I don't know if that's how it still is at CHS. I don't know if that's how it is at Huntington's chain or Paint Valley. But, you know, I think when kids have that choice, you know, most kids are going to pick, hey, I'm a junior and they're asking me this. I'm going to be in the game. I want to compete. I'm going to play JV.
Well, I think it comes down to having a vision for your program. You know, there's some years that I've encouraged the junior to go down and play JV because I thought he or she in the programs I've coached could really help us the following year. There has been some times where I've had some juniors come to me where I've had to tell the juniors, no, I'm sorry, I can't do that because I have a couple freshmen, sophomores that are really, really on the brink, and I've got to make sure that they're getting JV time, so I don't want the junior going down there and taking their minutes. So I really think you have to be honest with kids, but I think you also have to have a vision. Believe me, I spend hours and hours and hours on practice plans and on scouting and all the different sports I coach, but I also spend a lot of time kind of picturing my program a year ahead and understanding some of the things in practice and in game situations that I have to do to make sure my program's not just ready to go this year, but in future years as well. So this is a really interesting conversation, and there's no perfect way to do it because I've talked to some really, really good coaches, and you'll get some different philosophies on it. So I'm anxious to continue to get more feedback.
Yep, and of course you can provide us that feedback, and we'll get to that in just a little bit on how you can do so. But up next, it's back to basketball, where we explain what we've learned in the first half and what could be different in the second half. Well, it seems like it was a big weekend for the three-point shot. Shane, any special reason why you feel this might be cropping up on the radar screen?
Well, Derek, I think in the boys' side, the three-point shot is certainly a part of the arsenal of a lot of teams. It's a very guard-oriented league overall. And I think what happens a lot of times is they're starting to get in basketball shape. You've heard me say before, unfortunately, in today's time, we don't get a lot of the individual work in the off season. So a lot of kids, as we get into January, have now been in the gym 5, 6, 7 straight weeks. The shot starts to come a little bit. And you know, I'm sure there's some philosophies out there. You know, Dylan Swingle comes to my mind. He affects the game so much, offense, defense on both ends, that, you know, I know Paint Valley, for example, Derek, you covered them twice this week. Josh, didn't they give up like 25 threes in 2 nights or something like that? Maybe that has a lot to do with, you know, Dylan in the middle defensively, where a lot of people don't want to attack the rim. They feel like they're better off spreading Paint Valley and shooting it. And at the same time, Paint Valley shoots the three well, because again, you know, what do you do with Dylan? I mean, you're trying to send help. And so just like a Dylan Swingle in the games he plays in, Bruce, probably impacts the game on both ends. Those are just some of my thoughts. I mean, I know the three-point shot's something I love, Derek. What's your take on that as you look at the boys' race?
It's funny because I just wrote my column this week in today's paper, which would be yesterday's paper when this airs tomorrow. But, you know, it was all about the three-point shot. I've seen so many people or so many kids just chuck up 3-point shots. Some of them are good at it, some of them aren't, but they chuck it up. I think, again, as you said, I mean, when Dylan Swingle comes to mind, obviously Unyoda relies on the 3-ball a lot with Kennedy there and Logan Swackhammer there. They can shoot it. If you can shoot it, I mean, it's an absolute advantage. Mm. And I, you know, the fact of the matter is, a lot of our local teams can shoot the 3-ball pretty well. I don't think a lot of people realize how well they're actually shooting. When you look at the numbers and you look at the stats, and you look at this team is shooting 41% from the free throw line, or even like a Luke Johnson from Zane Trace, a freshman there. I mean, he's shooting over 40% from the 3-point line. It's just like, why not? If you're shooting over 40%, yeah, go ahead, chuck it up. So you know, as a journalist, as a fan, you see that all the time. You know, when you mentioned Paint Valley with Dylan Swingle, Drake Purdom has really, really come on over these past week and a half.
Yeah,
and to me, that is because of Swingle's inside presence. I mean, you got three people hanging off Dylan. Well, Drake's going to get a lot of open shots, and that kid can shoot. And when he's on, Paint Valley is very, very dangerous. The same could be said about Andrew Bronner there. You know, Cruz McFadden and Bryce Newland are coming along, and Bryce Newland can absolutely shoot the three. So, you know, I think Paint Valley's even relied a lot on the 3-ball to go on this little run they have. They are at once 2-4 You know, they're 6-1 their last seven games. So, you know, I really do think that a lot of the three ball is just how well you can shoot it. And a lot of our teams in the area can really shoot the three ball very well.
Mm-hmm. And three is better than two, right?
Exactly. Yes, one is the loneliest number, yeah, right? I mean,
I think someone once said that. I don't remember who. But hey, Shane, let's go to the boys segment of the fast break.
Sure. As we said earlier, in basketball, the fans seem to like it when we break it up. So we thought we would continue to do that. And when we do that, we use the three-question format. Again, it's brought to you by Crown Hill Golf Club. Want to give the fans that number one more time. Crown Hill Golf Club, 740-986-4653. Tell them SBC Sports Talk sent you. Again, this is a great time of year to talk to them, get you an early plan so that as soon as the weather changes here, in a month or two, you're ready to take full advantage. So, Bruce, on that note, let's go part two, I guess we'll call it, the boys segment of the fast break.
If you had to predict here at the halfway point, how many SBC teams do you feel could win a sectional title this winter?
Right now, if I had to predict, it'd be three. I'd have Uniota, Paint Valley, and an Adena or a Piketon team. Just the way that they're playing. Now, that could change by, you know, Tuesday, but for me. But right now, I would have three. I think Uniota, obviously, you know, I think that's a no-brainer. Although they could match up with a Chillicothe, a Vinton County, a Miami Trace in that D2 bracket. But the way it looks now, that may be a little bit farther down the road. You know, Adena, I think, is playing very well right now. We don't talk about them a lot. They're kind of under the radar. But Coach Kyle Bradley's got them in a real good place. And then Paint Valley, obviously, is as hot as they are. So right now, I'd pick those three. Then Piketon's just, you know, they're up and down so much, they're streaky. But if they're hot, you know, they can be a dangerous out, too.
Yeah, with Uniota, as long as D2 continues to get the four out, you know, in their half of the southeastern bracket there, they do have some really good teams. But with the way they'll be able to spread out there, hopefully Uniota will be able to get a favorable matchup and win one. And then every other school on the boys' side plays in the D3. And I tell you, a lot of times we end up seeing how they beat up on each other. Sometimes, as we've seen in the past, you can get four SBC teams in one bracket and only one of them can get out. So that'll be the biggest factor, Bruce, on this question. But I'll wait and see a little bit as Westfall continues to grow. But from what I've seen, every other school, depending on their matchup, could win a sectional. That doesn't mean we'll get that many. But I think with the parity, that's what's neat about it, is at this point in the year, I think it's a realistic goal for just about every SVC team to keep in place.
In looking at the Adena Sports Medicine SVC leaders, what do you see as the key stat that is influencing the standings the most?
Well, I mean, right now, you know, I look at the leaders and you know, you look at, we just talked about the three-point shot. You know, I would look at Uniota and that three-point shot. I mean, you've got in the top eight right now, three of those kids are in that top eight. And again, they rely on that a lot, especially with Swack, Hammer, and Kennedy there. Kennedy's shooting like 41% from the three-point line. Swack, Hammer's shooting just above 35. I mean, you know, without that three-point shot, Uniota really becomes one-dimensional. They become inside and then a team that goes inside out. And I think Uniota's strength is at that guard position, and they rely on Kennedy and Swackhammer and even Edler and White when they come in. They rely on those guys a lot. If they lose that 3-point, and if they have an off shooting night from the 3-point line, Uniota, you know, they're kind of exposed. So I think they rely on those guys a lot. If they shoot well, Uniota's tough to beat. So I'd go with that.
Well, I certainly agree. If Uniota shoots it well, they're almost unbeatable in our league. I think for me, what jumps out, Bruce, is the steals category with Swackhammer and Kennedy at the top. You know, whenever I can tell you as a coach, whenever your best players invest at the defensive end, it makes it easy to demand it across your entire roster. So I know, like in some of their zone pressure, they'll put the length of White out front. They'll use Ivy's quickness, Edler's quickness. And then they have some of the size of Fisher and Hill and Ogun in the back. But, you know, what I see with Swackhammer and Kennedy's ball pressure has really, really made this team a little bit more dynamic on the defensive end than they were a year ago. Now, in some of the better matchups or some of the better teams they've played, they're still trying to take that defense to even another level. And that's going to be a key for them come tournament time. time. But as far as our league standings go, I really think the ball pressure that the Uniata guards have been able to apply has been a big X factor.
With the boys' league, it seems everyone agrees Uniata is going to be the champion. So what do you see as the key in deciding the second place spot at the end of the year?
Well, Shane, you know, I told you earlier, it's kind of like the football season where you go to a game that's Zane Trace and you know Uniota wasn't playing in, and you're just like, I don't know who's going to win. And
right.
It's kind of like that in basketball at the second place, because as this question states, you kind of know that Uniota is probably going to be there at the end of the season. Everybody else has two or three losses, and you have no idea on a given night who's going to beat who. You know, Paint Valley and Edina played a tough, as we talked about on this past Friday, they played a tough game. Paint Valley was up big in that game. They could have easily won that game, but Edina comes back and wins. Paint Valley, Huntington could have easily beat Paint Valley the next night. There's just so many teams that, you know, if they're on that night, they're hard to beat. And, you know, we saw a great game on Saturday with Paint Valley and Huntington where both were on. That was probably the best game I've covered this year, Shane.
And sure.
You never would have known that. You know, I would have never guessed that. Well, I'm going out to Paint Valley to cover Huntington, and they're visiting the Bearcats. This is going to be the best game I cover all year.
Right.
You never know. So, I mean, if I had to answer the question, it would be consistency. If somebody can go on a consistent run and you know, go on a hot streak like Paint Valley has, you know, that they would probably end up in that second place spot. But right now, I don't see any signs of consistency.
Yeah, to me, guys, whenever you have the parity we have on the boys' side, the biggest thing that comes to my mind is number of possessions. And from a coaching aspect, when you think of possessions, you think of two categories. You think of turnovers and you think of rebounding. So when you're able to rebound the basketball at a high rate, which Paint Valley does, but then also taking care of the ball, Adina, Piketon, Zane Trace, some of those teams can really turn you over with their defensive pressure and so forth. So obviously the three-point shot can be the X factor. We just talked about it because the three is more than two, and a lot of times that can force a team out of their identity. But I really think pay attention to the turnover and the rebounding categories. And more times than not, you get those extra possessions, and that can be the difference. And because we're going to be playing so many one possession games all the way down to the final minute, that can be a big key.
All right, that is our boys segment of the Fast Break, brought to you as always by Crown Hill Golf Club. Give them a call and tell them that SVC Sports Talk sent you. We want to give you some information here about how you can contact these fine young gentlemen, and impart at least your thoughts about some of these topics that we've covered tonight. Shane, it can be reached best probably at email, and that is admin1@svcsportzone.com. He maintains two profiles on Facebook, and you can always follow him at svcsportzone.com on Twitter. Derek, on the other hand, he is a man of the Twitter age, and his handle is @DW1509. Good follow, lots of tweets going out. He and Sir Brock Netter will keep you really, really informed about what's going on, along with Shane and the SVC, and they are a good follow. But if you prefer email, he is available there at dweb@chillicothegazette.com. We also ask that you please subscribe to our podcast. You can do so through a pod app, a podcatcher app, or you can do so in the iTunes store. Give us a great rating and a favorable review. We move now to post-game comments, brought to you by CNK Athletic Equipment. Again, your local school apparel source. And you can also find fitness gear, sports accessories, headwear, and all kinds of sports equipment. You can look them up on the web, www.cnkathleticequipment.com, or give them a call, 740-477-9828, Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., Saturday, 9 a.m. to 12, and Sunday they are closed, so give them a call and see what they can fix for you. Well, guys, it's going to be, assuming that we don't run into weather this week, a pretty good week. So what matchups are we most looking forward to this week? Derek, we'll go to you first.
Well, you know, tomorrow I've got kind of a rare day off. I know I just went to Florida, guys, you know, again, I actually, with me, I go to Florida and then I kind of I kind of chomp at the bit because I'm like, I got to be on the computer doing stats, or I got to do something. So I'm not really a guy that likes to take a lot of vacation. So again, I'm happy to be back in the swing of things. I'm going to be at Uniota at Zane Trace Girls on Tuesday. On Thursday, I've got Uniota at Huntington. Shane, I'll be out your way, which should be a very good game. Both teams can score at will. And then Friday, I've got Zane Trace at Uniota Boys. And Saturday, I've got Piketon at Edina Boys. So just, you know, really all of them. I mean, I just like basketball. I like seeing our local kids compete. You know, I can't really pick one, but I'll be there for everyone.
Shane, how about you? What you looking forward to?
Well, he touched on some of it, Bruce. I think it's really interesting. This weekend is when the boys will play their final game. So you get your preview matchups Friday night. Mm-hmm. Then you start back over on Saturday into the second round. Mm-hmm. And when I look at Piketon, Zane Trace, Paint Valley, even throwing a Dean in on one of those, all four of those teams that are really in this two-hole race play a bunch of head-to-head Friday, Saturday. So by the time we meet next week, we'll have a really good discussion point there on the boys' side. And then on the girls' side, the Piketon Paint Valley game is really interesting. Obviously, without Blanton, that's a big blow to Piketon. This is a big, big game for Paint Valley. I don't have that schedule in front of me. I believe that's Paint Valley's home game, and that's really, really important for Paint Valley. Piketon will really guard you on the perimeter, so Paint Valley's guards are going to have to really handle the ball, and if they do, they'll have some different things. So, a lot of fun basketball ahead. And it's glad to be back. I know we went just a little over the hour mark tonight, but it's been a lot of fun, and we'll kind of stay steady in our schedule from here on out. So encourage the fans to give us that feedback, and we'll sit down here every Sunday night in studio and try to get a show out for people to listen to come Monday night. So guys, a lot of fun. Glad to have you back. And until next time, for Triple Crown Family Fun Center in Chillicothe, as well as all the other sponsors on the website, for Bruce Knox and all the people behind the scenes at DBK Media Services, and for Derek Webb, this is Shane Combs reminding you to keep visiting svcsportszone.com, where we are 100% SVC 100% of the time.
You've been listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk. SVC Sports Talk is brought to you by svcsportszone.com and Triple Crown Family Fun Center. Join us next time for the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk. And visit svcsportszone.com, where we're 100% SVC 100% of the time.